The current sponsor of Fraudology is Sardine. If you aren't familiar with them yet, Sardine protects every customer interaction from financial crime. Banks, retailers, and fintechs use Sardine to detect fraud patterns, prevent money laundering, and stop sophisticated scams. You'll get to learn more about them throughout this quarter on Fraudology. But if you'd like to learn more about Sardine now, you can click on the link in the show notes of this episode to read more about them and to request a personalized demonstration of Sardine's suite of products. Welcome to Fraudology Podcast, where we dive into the science and study of online fraud from the perspective of an e-commerce fraud fighter. I'm Carice Hendrick. Visa just recently released an update to the way that the card absent programs are going to be monitoring fraud. It's going to have a big impact on e-commerce companies, especially, or any merchants that are in a card absent environment, whether it's in app, on web, over the phone still, however those payments are being processed. This will also greatly impact acquirers and merchant processors and have a light impact on issuing banks. And so because of that, in lieu of a guest today, I thought that I would go through this announcement and kind of break it down and translate it for you. One of my skill sets over the years, especially because I started out on the merchant processing side, is being able to speak what I call Visa ease, Visa's language when they come out with these types of bulletins. And so I'll break it down for you and explain who it impacts, why they're doing it, what this means, all the above. You know, the first thing is these changes won't go into effect until April of 2025. However, because some of the changes will require infrastructure updates, you're going to want to know about them ahead of time. So I know April seems like a long time away, but it's important to know about these now. If you're on the e-commerce side of fraud or within that ecosystem, so on the acquiring side or the processing side, you're probably very familiar with the VFMP and the VDMP programs that Visa has. It stands for the Visa Fraud Monitoring Program and the Visa Dispute Monitoring Program. I've been in this space for almost 20 years, and both of those programs have been predominant in my career. So it's a big deal to see that starting next April, Visa is going to be retiring those programs. So before I get into that too much, when Visa makes a change to their programs, and I only can speak to the programs that govern the card absent programs or the card absent environments on the payment side. So they might do something different when they're programs that impact issuers. But this is what I know from the acquiring and merchant side. They often inform acquirers first. And acquirers are responsible for telling their merchants, with a few exceptions. There are some very large enterprise merchants that get alerts from Visa directly. But usually the process is Visa tells the acquirers tell the payment processors that are underneath them. And then those payment processors or whoever has the direct relationship with the merchant, whether that's an acquiring bank or a payment processor, they will let their merchants know. They all have varying levels of communication, and some don't ever communicate changes, but I am sure that these changes will be communicated because they're very big. They'll make its shift in the ecosystem. All of these changes are Visa specific, but MasterCard is often sure to follow eventually. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if a year or two later down the line, MasterCard introduced something similar to this program. Their monitoring programs are not exactly the same. They're not a carbon copy to Visa's, but they're very similar. And so if Visa is looking to retire these programs that monitor merchants directly, then they will probably follow suit, I would imagine, at some point. So what I know about this particular announcement is that it was sent out to acquirers, issuers, and processors in May of 2024. So just a couple of weeks ago. I think it was the end of May. Visa's not saying if these changes are final. It sounds like they're giving acquirers time to respond or possibly make complaints. But I think that they feel strongly enough that this is the direction that they're headed. So there might be some tweaks, but I wouldn't expect this decision to just be null and void. They put a lot of time and thought into their announcements. They do give time for comment, but by the impacted parties, more or less, they because these changes actually are more impactful on the acquirers than on merchants directly, that's probably who will, you know, have the most say. But they put this out for comment, and then with the intention of all of this going live April 1st of 2024. So they're giving processors, issuers, and merchants time to make any adjustments or changes that they need to before that time. This notice was sent to acquirers in Europe. So this is not effective for Visa US yet, which is kind of interesting because Visa EU is no longer separate from Visa US as they used to be. I mean, honestly, when I started my career, Visa also used to be a nonprofit. So a nonprofit organization. So a lot has changed in my career in payments. And we've seen that impact a few things. But just to be clear, this is for merchants, CMP, card absent merchants, and acquirers and payment processors that process in Europe that have European merchant IDs. So it doesn't impact US merchants yet. However, again, just like, you know, with what I said about MasterCard, depending on the rollout, I would imagine that this will be coming to US very soon. These changes are set to go into effect of April 2025. They do have a rollout period. So when I get into the details, you'll understand that more, but there is a final portion of it that goes live January 1st of 2026. But it starts out April 1st, 2025. So almost a year. But like I said, that might seem like a long time away, but in payments, that's not that much time. So kind of the executive summary of this bulletin is that Visa will be retiring the VFMP and VDMP programs and enhancing their VAMP programs to change how they measure and enforce fraud rates. So VAMP stands for Visa Acquirer Monitoring Program. And that's always been in effect. There's always been an acquiring monitoring program for Visa to measure the health, the fraud health of acquirers and their overall portfolio. But then there's always been individual accountability for merchants. And that's been the core piece that has derived fines and fees for being, you know, higher in the program and that type of thing. I've broken down the VFMP and the VDMP programs on past episodes of Fraudology. I'm going to be breaking it down a little bit in this episode, but not a ton. So I'm not sure how to go. There's 290 episodes, so I know that's hard, but maybe if you search VDMP in Spotify, you might be able to find that episode. I'm sorry, I don't know offhand when it was. But it's really how they measure and enforce fraud rates across card absent environment and within the whole ecosystem. So currently, the Visa Fraud Monitoring Program is based on TC40 complaints. So whenever someone contacts their issuer and says that they had fraud on their account, there's a TC40 file originated for it. These are separate from chargebacks. Not all TC40s turn into chargebacks, depending on the dollar amount and some other factors. But TC40s are measured, and that's kind of how Visa measures if a merchant is fraudulent themselves or if they are allowing too much fraud on their platform where they're not having a good or a good enough fraud monitoring program for themselves, transaction risk monitoring programs, right? So they're not putting in the right fraud technology to measure these. Currently, the VFMP starts at a 0.9% fraud ratio. So that's dividing all TC40 counts divided by the count, the number of sales transactions in a month. And if that is more than 90 basis points or 0.9%, then you will be enrolled in the VFMP. The other qualifier is that you have to have more than $75,000 a month in reported fraud. So these are for, you know, bigger companies. but it can add up and it can happen quickly. I've worked with my share of merchants that are both enrolled in the VFMP and the VDMP. That's often when I'm contacted to help merchants get off of those programs in a holistic way. So very familiar with these programs, and that's why I believe this is a pretty big deal. The VDMP, the Visa Dispute Monitoring Program, that measures all incoming chargebacks, whether they're fraud reason codes or not. And similar to the fraud ratio, it is the number of chargebacks divided by the number of sales in a month. And if that is that percentage is over 0.9% and that merchant has over 100 disputes a month, then they can be enrolled in the VDMP program. There's a little bit of overlap because fraud complaints can turn into chargebacks and often do, but the dispute monitoring program is also measuring the overall disputes. So the service level chargebacks too, the ones that are non-fraud, such as did not receive, not as described, etc. So these are put in place to measure the health of a merchant ID, to measure the health of a card absent environment, because we know that e-commerce is really built on trust, right? That customers are trusting that they're going to pay now and get the item, you know, several days or several weeks later. So this is Visa's way of kind of making sure that merchants are, for the most part, holding up their end of that trust and their end of the deal. Currently, these programs are measured per merchant. They're calculated by the acquirer and Visa, and violations or fees are assessed after 3 to 4 months in each program. I think it's changed. It used to be 4, now it's 3, I think. But there's a 3-month grace period, but then fees and fines are assessed per dispute or per fraud alert. And that can get costly very quickly. And currently these are assessed by Visa. So Visa is the one assessing this risk and assessing the programs. The acquirers also do their own calculations, but oftentimes Visa will alert the acquirers that, you know, of a list of merchants that qualify for these programs every month. And then Visa finds the acquirer, but the acquirer finds the merchant. The VAMP, like I mentioned before, does currently exist. It's the Visa Acquiring Monitoring Program. And I'll read a description of that I track down. So the Visa Acquirer Monitoring Program is a consolidated initiative that tracks acquirer activity related to fraud and chargebacks. It leverages a transaction count-based metric and the Visa Account Attack Intelligence score system to offer better risk-based enforcement and improved fraud coverage. So they're basically looking at it on the acquirer level. Does the acquirer have high-risk portfolio? Are they working with their merchants to reduce their fraud? Are they, you know, maybe they are almost requiring their merchants to use their own fraud system, but it doesn't really work? That definitely happens. That's a whole other conversation to be had, but there are PSPs out there that are pushing their own fraud products that are really not even close to compatible with third-party products, but they're claiming they are. And then I definitely see some trends of some payment processors that have their own internal fraud tool that their merchants tend to score higher and get on these programs more than other merchants that use a third party and that don't use their payment processor's fraud tool. That is purely anecdotal from my own experience, but you can see a trend of which PSPs are, you know, have that. But overall, as a rule, for anyone on the enterprise side, or really anyone that processes more than 50 million a year, maybe even a little less, depending on the risk of the product, when they're using a PSP as their main fraud defense, oftentimes I find that they're more likely to be on the VFMP and or the VDMP, because those fraud products are subpar. That's my own perspective, but I have yet to meet anyone who doesn't work for any PSP tell me differently. So I'm happy to have that conversation at any time. But that has been my experience there. So I think that, you know, the VAMP is good because they're not only measuring the acquirer's portfolio, but also if the acquirer's tools that they're providing their merchants are actually working. Maybe this will be an incentive for acquirers to step up their game for their fraud platforms to make sure that their merchants keep their risk low, because there's going to be a lot more pressure put on the acquirers with this new update, and a little less on the merchants for once. And there still will be some pressure on merchants for sure, but that pressure may be coming from their acquirer more than from Visa. And it'll be more on a holistic look at the overall portfolio of the acquirer, and then subsequently the payment processors that are under that acquirer, and then the e-commerce merchants that are under those. So they'll be looking at it from a portfolio perspective more than from a micro perspective at the merchant level as much. Okay, so as I mentioned, on April 1st of next year, 2025, VAMP, VFMP, and VDMP will all be consolidated into one program, the VAMP. A new transaction count-based metric that combines both fraud and non-fraud disputes will be introduced. So it will calculate both fraud, so TC40 reports, as well as chargeback disputes. The VAMP ratio is going to be calculated of a sum of card absent transactions, so TC40 by post date, plus non-fraud dispute codes by the processing date, divided by the number of settled transactions per acquirer. So they'll add up the number of transactions that were reported on a TC40 by acquirer, add that with non-fraud disputes, so they're not double counting fraud chargebacks, which I think is a good thing. So non-fraud disputes by the processing date, so when those disputes are processed, and then they're dividing the number of settled transactions per acquirer. Sardine helps their clients reduce fraud rates, decrease false positives, and streamline risk operations with their fully integrated suite of products. You can use Sardine for customer due diligence, fraud prevention, risk scoring, investigations, transaction monitoring, and/or case management. Their suite of products include device and behavior intelligence, identity fraud detection, account takeover and/or payment fraud prevention, issuing fraud detection, KYC and KYB, and AML compliance, all in one platform. With Sardine, banking and online companies can capture deep device intelligence and behavior biometrics for every customer touchpoint and interaction on your website or app. Stop fraudsters from hiding their true identity. Prevent fake account signups. Detect synthetic and stolen IDs. Block bot attacks, click fraud, promo code abuse, fake listings, and device obfuscation. Prevent unauthorized access to customer accounts. Stop the use of stolen credentials. You can detect social engineering schemes like romance scams, fake financial advisors, and voice cloning attacks. Prevent fraudulent online payments, account funding, and transfers. Protect users from APP fraud, that's authorized push payment fraud. Block stolen payment credentials and decline transactions likely to result in ACH returns or chargebacks. You can also detect refund and/or returns abuse. Tackle first-party fraud and stop fraudsters from gaming your policies. Stop card cloning attacks. Prevent unauthorized card-not-present and card-present transactions. And ingest risk scores in real time for authorization decisions. For KYC and KYB, perform customer due diligence, global watchlist screening, and document verification all in one platform. Support flexible onboarding flows that route users down streamlined paths or step up verifications. And for AML compliance, centralize your compliance operations in one dashboard. You can configure real-time and batch transaction monitoring rules, investigate suspicious activity, streamline your SAR or UAR filings, and automate case management. I've seen a lot of fraud tools and can safely say that that's a lot of capabilities to have all in one platform. You can take advantage of all or some of these features to either supplement or replace your current fraud tools. To learn more about Sardine's suite of products or to contact them to request a personalized demo of their platform, go to www.sardine.ai. That's www.sardine.ai. This ratio is going to exclude refunded transactions, so transactions that were refunded to the cardholder before the chargeback date, if they're done through one of Visa's verified products. So through Rapid Dispute Resolutions, their CDRN, their Cardholder Dispute Resolution Network, and Confirmed Compelling Evidence 3.0, except for fraud disputes. So there will be some exclusions to that ratio. So it will basically, the calculation will be the sum of CMP transactions that are, you know, receive TC40 alerts plus non-fraud disputes minus those that have been refunded through a product that is owned by Visa after they purchased Verify a few years ago. And then that number is divided by the number of settled transactions per acquirer. There are definitely incentives for participating in within or using Visa products, you know, since they purchased Verify. I think it's important to note that those all have extra fees attached to them. That's not always something that's communicated when they're talking about those products, but every one of those have, and some of them can be significant. So I'm not going to go into the products today, but and the differences between RDR and CRDN and all of that, but these are pre-chargeback alerts, essentially, and in different ways, in different forms, and they are something that does cost extra. However, it up until now, those were included in, you know, VFMP and BDMP calculations. So I think that's good. What it doesn't account for are any chargebacks that are won by the merchant. You could assume that if a chargeback is won by a merchant, that you could say that chargeback was filed incorrectly. Those still count. The chargeback, all monitoring programs will always be counting the incoming chargeback disputes by the number, not the net number of chargebacks that were deducted from the merchant's account and found in favor of the issuer after the representment process. So it's not necessarily a net, it's more of a gross, but they are allowing for some of these things to not count if you are refunding them prior to the chargeback, because you are enrolled in the Visa products. As far as what the ratios are going to be, they're going to change significantly, but in different ways. So I think some are good, some are bad, some are, and maybe not good or bad. Those aren't the right terms. I think it's more like some are high, some are low. Maybe that's more what I'm saying. But the current ratio for merchants for the fraud program as well as for the dispute program is 0.9%, right? 90 basis points. Depending on the merchant, you know, their level of risk for various reasons, that can be high or that can seem very low, depending on their risk and how the merchant identifies fraudulent transactions, as well as how they handle customer disputes before they make it to the issuer. It used to be over 1%, and for the last few years, it's been 0.9%, which has been a challenge for several merchants since they lowered the threshold. Starting April of 2025, the VAMP, so that's measuring the acquirers, which are, you know, 1 to 2 steps above the merchants, and they're looking at their entire portfolio, but that ratio will be 0.5% or 50 basis points. So it's significantly lower than what it's at the merchant level. This can be seen as stricter. And then what's even more, and this is what caught most everyone's attention that I know that read this, on the merchant side anyway, is effective January 2026, the VAMP threshold for excessive will be at 0.3%. So I think the goal of a lot of acquirers is going to be getting some adding merchants that are low risk, that don't have high chargebacks in the card absent environment, so that they can net out that ratio, because that 0.3 is quite low. On the other hand, merchants will still be individually looked at for excessive chargebacks and fraud reports. And the excessive level for them will start at 1.5%. So it is going to allow the per merchant level to be a little bit higher, which I think is good given just how much fraud there is in the ecosystem. And that's really what the purpose of all of this is to attempt to give incentives to reduce fraud across the entire ecosystem. A couple of other details with this, for first-time identifications within a rolling 12-month period, a 3-month grace period will be given before enforcement actions are taken. Subsequent identifications after the grace period ends will be subject to enforcement. I believe in order to get off of this program, you will have to have 3 months without being in the program in order to get out of it. That's standard for all of their programs now. So that's how I'm reading this now. If acquirer portfolio performance is above the specified threshold, enforcement fees will apply to each dispute, fraud and non-fraud, for all merchants with a VAMP ratio of 30 bips, and that's after January 2026. If merchant performance is above the specified excessive threshold, which is 1.5%, enforcement fees will apply to each dispute, fraud, and non-fraud for that merchant only. Between April 1st, 2025 and January 1st, 2026, the VAMP program, anything over 0.5% for that acquirer will be $10 USD per fraud and non-fraud disputes. And for merchants, it'll be anything over 1.5%, it'll be $10 USD per fraud and non-fraud disputes. After January 1st of 2026, the VAMP thresholds go down to 0.3% or 30 basis points. And at that level, it'll be $5 USD per fraud and non-fraud disputes for that acquirer, for any merchants that are underneath that acquirer that reach that point. If the acquirer is over 0.5%, then that goes into excessive and $10 USD will be assessed. For merchants, that threshold is 1.5% at $10 per fraud and non-fraud dispute. The impact to issuers are fairly low, so I'll just read those and get that out of the way first before going into the impact that I see to acquirers and merchants for this. This bulletin does say that effective March 31st, 2025, for VDMP, the merchant level program that currently supports issuer reimbursement will be retired. So issuer reimbursement will not be applicable under the updated VAMP. So I don't actually know what the merchant or what the issuer reimbursement is for VDMP violations, but that will be retired. So issuers won't be getting that anymore. I do know that there's issuer reimbursement for interchange. There's issuer reimbursement for other things. So in this case, no longer will issuers be getting a cut of the fines that are assessed for those programs. They'll all be going to Visa. That's how I read that. Anyway, again, sometimes in these documents, it's left to interpretation, but pretty clearly says that the issuer reimbursement will be discontinued for VAMP. So that tells me there's no more issuer reimbursement. So I think that's fair. There's also some talk around enumerated transactions. That's really what Visa calls card testing. Per Visa, enumeration is the criminal practice of submitting fraudulent card-not-present transactions into the payment ecosystem in order to obtain valid payment information. So in order to determine if that card is valid or not, to get an authorization or not. An enumeration attack is closely related to card testing. A scammer will systematically submit transactions, usually via bot, partial cardholder information to try and identify valid data attributes. In the context of VAMP, we're referring here to transactions submitted by merchants that are themselves engaged in an enumeration attack. So there is some verbiage around card testing, and basically if Visa identifies that more than 20% of a merchant's transactions are part of an enumeration attack, then there could also be fees and fines. I think that's also something that should be assessed at the acquirer level or at the payment processor level, because there are some payment processors or some platforms online that are more subject to enumeration attacks and card testing than others. Unfortunately, a lot of merchants are having to pay for those authorization fees. But when you look at a whole, it's like, there's a lot more merchants that are using payment processor B that are getting card testing more than card processor C, for example. So just, I'm assuming that's why they're doing that. It's part of the program, but I just thought that it was too confusing to include when I was going through the percentages and all that. So I'm just kind of leaving it as the side piece of the program. You know, the biggest thing that anyone can do right now is, you know, make sure that they're using all the tools at their disposal. What Visa is saying that means is making sure that you're using, you know, Verify CDRN or Visa's rapid dispute resolution, as well as that you're able to comply with compelling evidence 3.0, which essentially is using CDRN, as well as, you know, resolving TC40 notices. So I believe that those are good programs that can be used in some cases, but don't always need to be used. If you're holistically identifying fraud at the time of transaction before, settling the transaction before you are providing any goods or services, then you're going to be better off, you know, for the fraud side anyway. And then on the non-fraud side, it's all about customer service. And you will still get what we call friendly fraud disputes. You'll still get first party disputes, but they will go down dramatically if you address some of the systematic issues that may be contributing to those non-fraud chargebacks. For instance, if you are receiving a lot of not as described chargebacks for a particular product, that's something to look into. That's just one example, but that's something I've been working on with my clients for almost 10 years now. And it's amazing what you can find out just by doing some chargeback analytics and looking at the data and, you know, identifying those. So I think it's important to be aware of that. And again, just do whatever you can to clean up your side of the street, you know, for the most part. What this doesn't talk about is how and when fees will be assessed to merchants if they have a ratio under 1.5%. What I believe will happen is that acquirers will be assessing those fees anyway. So if the acquirer is assessed a fee of anything over 0.3% of any merchants that are over 0.3%, then my guess is that the acquirers will be assessing those fees to the merchants, but it's up to each acquirer. So it will be important in the coming months for merchants to talk with their payment processors and or their acquirers, whoever they have the end relationship with, to find out how those are going to be assessed. You don't want to be surprised by those in the middle of 2025. So just because these programs say that the merchants, you know, individually won't be impacted until there's a 1.5% fraud and non-fraud dispute ratio, that doesn't mean that your acquirer isn't going to assess fees if your company is over 0.3%. So, it's really going to depend on the acquirer and their type of portfolio and how many merchants they have over those percentages. But I can see all of them just assessing those fees down the chain. And so just because the individual one, if the acquirer is under 0.3%, but there's a particular merchant under that acquirer that's over 1.5%, they will have fees assessed and they'll be within the program. But if the acquirer is over 0.3%, which we know is pretty low, then I think that you should be expecting to, if your merchant account is also over 0.3% of fraud and non-fraud disputes, you should be expecting to be assessed fines as well. So these are going to be questions you're going to need to talk to your payment processor and your acquirers about. I don't know if they have the answers yet. I wouldn't assume that they do, but it'd be something that you'd want to know soon. That hopefully in the next few months, they'll, you know, communicate this to you, but it'll be something that will be really important. I think the other impact to acquirers is that now acquirers are going to have to do a lot more to assess fees, and it's going to be a lot more on them. I can see, you know, several of them hiring more positions for this because there's going to be a lot more work to be done to work with individual merchants. You know, payment processors aren't always equipped to provide the best advice to card absent merchants who have high chargebacks, but they're going to have to start now that there's more pressure put on the acquirer directly to have these ratios under a much stricter, you know, percentage points. I think I said this before, but presently all chargebacks count against your chargeback ratio, even if you win in a chargeback or even if you refund a dispute to prevent a chargeback. It can still adversely affect your fraud to sales or dispute to sales ratio. But with VAMP, and again, this is just for European merchants first, one way to avoid these restrictions associated with, you know, these currently with VDMP and VFMP are to, you know, resolve the disputes through the designated Visa and verified products so that you can then you know, not have those count. So I would imagine that your acquirer will be pushing those products even more than they are now. I don't know how many acquirers actually are resellers of those programs. I think it's primarily chargeback management companies, but I could see acquirers saying, hey, you know, get on these programs or, you know, get these products so that we can have as many fraud disputes and non-fraud disputes subtracted from that overall number. And I think that that should be a decision made by each individual merchant. There are certainly merchants that I've worked with that I have recommended those products to. And then there are others that I don't recommend those products to because of the cost and because of other things that can be done holistically to reduce their fraud and dispute numbers. They don't necessarily need it. So, you know, it'll be important to assess it depending on the cost as well as the benefit to your merchant account, as well as, you know, at the acquirer level, who you're going to suggest it to and who you're not and all of that. For acquirers, you know, the VAMP program aims to assist acquirers in managing the levels of risk, fraud, and disputes in their portfolio. These changes, you know, give acquirers more flexibility to manage their overall portfolio and enhances their ability to maintain and manage effective oversight for individual merchants. But what this also means is that they're going to have to pay for more oversight, you know, to manage and maintain that oversight of individual merchants. I don't believe that every processor or acquirer is set up for that. And so I think that we will see changes made on the acquirer side where, you know, there were pieces of this program that Visa managed that they won't be anymore, that will now be on the acquirer side. So that's something to be aware of. Overall, I can't really say if these changes are good or bad, not until they're really in deployment and we're seeing them in effect. I think that they're interesting. I think that, you know, whenever changes are made to the rules for fraud compliance, there's a lot of cause and effect that occurs. Some are positive effects, some are negative effects. I think that we can, you know, guess what some of them are, as I just shared what some of my predictions are for how these will turn out, but we don't know. I think there will be some acquirers that are really concerned because their portfolios are higher risk than others. There will be other acquirers that have so much volume that is good that they're not worried. So, you know, I could also see there being some merchants being asked to leave acquirers if their percentages are too high. That could cause a lot of issues because acquirers aren't going to want to have merchants on their portfolio that have a relatively high percentage of fraud and non-fraud chargebacks or disputes. I can see processing fees going up quite a bit for those merchants because they will add more risk to the overall portfolio. Then again, this is just in Europe, and the percentages might be different in the US because in Europe, they have 3D Secure, they have PSD2, they have other things that already keep fraud disputes and chargebacks relatively lower than in the US. So that's probably why they're rolling it out to Europe first. I don't know anything about when it'll be rolled out to APAC or the US, but I'll keep you guys posted on that. I just thought that this was really important, especially for my e-commerce listeners. It can be confusing and, you know, who knows when your acquirer and or your payment processor is going to relay this information to you. So I thought it was important to relay it to you as soon as possible. And these documents have been made public by various companies on their blogs. So I felt like it was important to go through. And I'm sorry if I tried to make it as interesting to listen to as possible and not you know, but some of these reading, some of these numbers and everything else can sometimes come across as that, but hopefully it's helpful to you. Hopefully it's helpful to know what to plan and what to start talking to your leadership about, what to start socializing up the ladder to say, hey, we might be feeling more pressure from our acquirer and here's why. So with that, I'll let you go, but I'll be back with some fraud news on Thursday of this week, and I'll look forward to speaking with you then.